Today, I'm very pleased to have on the phone Mark Hustler. And Mark is one of the co-founders of the band Negative Land, which started making music in the late 70s, put out their first album in 1980, and continues to do live shows and recordings. Their latest album came out last year in 2019. It's called True False. Some of their other albums that I have really appreciated over the years: Escape from Noise, Helter Stupid, and The ABCs of Anarchism is one of my favorites. And there also was the intriguing, surprising EP U2. And as I mentioned, they have a new album called True False, which is a really huge album, I have to say. I listened to it with headphones on and enjoyed the musicality of it, and also the critical thinking, politically and socially, as usual, Negative Land putting it out. And Mark Hustler, thank you for joining me today. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, am I coming through?
You are coming through.
I'm coming through on Transformation Highway. How long have you had that? How long have you had your show?
Well, you know, I did a similar show on Free Radio Santa Cruz for almost 20 years.
Okay, cool.
And that show was called The Great Leap Forward, and this one has transformed into Transformation Highway.
Okay. Well, and that's great.
I know.
Well, it's very nice. Thanks for having me on live. As I mentioned off the air, everyone in Negative Land loves live radio, because we've done a lot of it over the years.
I know that you have done a lot of live radio and a lot of communication in general through your music and ideas. And I'd love to hear about some of that, all of that. Tell me about the newest album, True False. Let me just tell you a few things that I really appreciated about the album that stood out for me. One thing is the humor that just peeks through here and there, which has always been the case. There's sometimes a lot of serious matter and important, significant stuff you're covering in your music, and then the humor peeks through. There's this piece, Limbo, that's the second song on the album, and there's this part where the telephone is ringing and then it catches on fire, and it's kind of a lighthearted part. I also really liked the drums, the live drumming that happens in a couple of the songs, and the song Discernment, about why do we believe what we believe. There's a song about certain men always get their way, about consolidation of wealth and how money works, which a lot of people are confused about, rightly so. And then there's stuff about nonviolence and living in the middle of the most violent society history's ever created. Some prepared piano on the piece Destroying Anything. And I really was interested in this. Maybe you can say a few words about Destroying Anything. There's a part where someone is talking about how our only hope is the collapse of industrialized civilization. And if that's so, isn't it our responsibility to bring that about? Tell me about this latest album and about confronting the consolidation of wealth and power in this country.
Sure. One thing I should just interject, a technical thing, is I think when you're talking, if I try and talk, I think I don't come through. So does that sound right? When I tried to say something, it sounded like, because of the way the squelch thing works on the air, the way your compression and limiting and gating works. So we may be having to be very careful to take turns in our questions and answers. But let's see, going back to what you said at the beginning of the record, thank you very much. And yeah, we're super excited about the record. For people who may or may not be familiar with our work, while we do have some vocals on the record done by Negative Land member David Wills, also known as the Weatherman, 85% of the quote-unquote vocals are cut up spoken word bits that were taken from TV, talk radio, instructional videos, you know, YouTube, children's records, environmental recordings, et cetera, et cetera. And so we collage them all together to make a piece that we hope that digs into things, evokes things. One way I describe our work is that we make things about stuff that makes everyone anxious. But also, as you mentioned, and I appreciate you saying that, there's a lot of humor in it. I think Limbo is actually this incredibly dark track, but it's also really funny. And that's sort of a thing. We like that kind of almost cognitive dissonance in your brain, where somehow maybe you're feeling this sense of delight while you're hearing us ruminate about something that's pretty awful. But that's definitely part of our kind of aesthetic and ethic in how we create things, for sure. The quote you mentioned in Destroying Anything is, in fact, a quote that I'd say we're very sympathetic to. However, that is being spoken by Glenn Beck, the extremely right-wing news guy who moved from CNN to Fox and now has his own show. And he's actually... that's from an episode of his show where he's actually describing what he sees as horrible extreme leftists, you know, this is their argument. And he actually wrote it up on a chalkboard. And if we made a video to go with Destroying Anything, which you can find if you go do a YouTube search. And we actually have the clip of him, you know, the video clip synced up with the audio of him at the chalkboard actually laying this out. So it adds these other levels of meaning. You know, is Negative Land saying that this is what we believe? What's that guy actually mean? Because the way we use it out of context is it sounds like it's someone saying what they think. It's actually someone saying the exact opposite. And he's someone who's decrying that way of thinking, saying this is terrible. So those kinds of interesting tensions can happen when you do collage. And ultimately, what we like is that if people have the time, and in this day and age, you know, I don't know if anyone does have the time to listen to our records very carefully, because we work on these records for years and years. That, you know, this record was about 4 years in the making, and we really do try to make stuff that we hope you can, if you listen to it repeatedly, more and more will be revealed. And in fact, there's another double album coming out that's a sequel of sorts to this, to True False. It's coming out this year. And when you hear it, you're going to hear there's all kinds of ways that this current record is connected to the next one, and the next one's connected to this one. And in both the sound design, the tapes we use, and even the graphic design. So we really like that collage is a really interesting medium to work in, because if you are paying attention to it, there's a level at which your brain kind of has to work out what's going on. That's different than if we were just singing in a singular voice that we wrote our lyrics. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Absolutely. And there are voices, clips that you're using where it is pretty clear that this is, you're dramatizing something that you don't agree with, that is extreme or strange or something like that. And then there's the voices that seem more, that you're proposing as possible new ways of thinking or looking at things.
Right. And yet, but you, the listener, and you said you listened to the record a number of times and on headphones, and that's great. I mean, that's kind of what we always hope people will do. We've become kind of almost an anachronism. Like, who the hell has time to listen to concept albums, record albums nowadays? I don't know. But working out which are those things, I think is really interesting, because you can tell, hopefully, that an enormous amount of care is put into everything we do, that it's all, every single speck of sound and voice has been carefully considered. There's nothing random in the final product whatsoever. But again, you kind of have to work out sort of exactly where we're coming from. I will say that track you mentioned, Destroying Anything, that's the first time that we I would say I think that's the first track we've ever made in 40 years where we really directly deal with capitalism. And I would say personally, well, growing, I was born in 1962, and one of the cliches I absorbed growing up in this country was that as you get older, you get more conservative. You know, when you're younger, that's kind of like, that's your wild, crazy, radical days. And I found in my life to be the exact opposite, that the older I get, the more I understand systems of power, economics, you know, just how things run in this country and in the world, the more kind of the bigger the picture gets that I'm viewing. And at this point, it's kind of, and I don't think it's coming from a leftist perspective or a right, you know, a middle, or, you know, I don't worry about the labels, but I think that, and I'd say this is true for other members of Negative Land, is that as we've gotten older, it's become pretty clear that if you zoom out far enough to, from all the problems that are facing us as a country and as a planet, that one of the meta problem is that we happen to have created an economic system which has created lots of innovation and creativity and invention and all that, and there's amazing things about it in capitalism, but capitalism only functions if it endlessly grows. And it doesn't take into account that, you know, as they say, there's no planet B. We have finite resources. There's a finite amount of every single thing here and space and all that. So it's the whole system that we're embedded in this country and in the West, is just predicated on a completely insane, faulty model, which is that somehow we can endlessly grow. And clearly what we're seeing, you know, in so many different ways with what's happening with, you know, inequality and what's happening with the environment and what's happening with jobs and what's happening with, you know, the way the current folks running the country is it's all unsustainable. And it's the fruits of an incredibly unsustainable, ultimately inhuman, you know, immoral, or it's, I don't know, it's amoral, immoral, unethical, just inhumane system. So that being said, which is kind of a rant, but that being said, we didn't want to make a rant. You know, we're trying to make a work of art. And so as much as our work is, you know, for the most part, we don't do love songs. You know, maybe we did one in 40 years. I don't know. I think there's been one. And in fact, that one, it's on Sigmotactic. The only reason there's one love song is simply because at some point, I think I pointed out to the group that we'd never done one, and it'd be interesting to try and do one. But there's enough love songs out there, right? There's a zillion of them, and plenty of them, you know, are great. The world doesn't really need another love song. So, but maybe there's something else that could exist in dealing with and ruminating with and being creatively responding to this strange world we're in of media, you know, and laws and power, et cetera, et cetera. So, Negative Land, I guess, as the years went by, we gradually got more. I don't know, our perspective grew, we got more political in our thinking, and it translated into our work. And though always trying, whenever possible, to add in things that are funny, because we like to laugh, so we like things that are funny.
My name is John Malkin. This is Transformation Highway. You're listening to KZSC Santa Cruz, 88.1 FM, KZSC.org. And today I am speaking with Mark Hustler, and he is with the band Negative Land. He's been with them since the beginning, one of the co-founders of the band. Their latest album is True, False, and it sounds like there'll be a follow-up album this year in 2020. Just to continue, I don't know if you want to say more about the upcoming album. I'd also love to hear a little more about capitalism and the alternatives to that, which you do present information about, which to me is really important. In this song that we're talking about on the album True False, this song Destroying Anything, there is a voice that says, "It's easy to imagine the end of the world, but you cannot imagine the end of capitalism." And then to just go back years to the piece that you all put together, ABCs of Anarchism, and there's a voice that is saying, anarchism means no war, no violence, no monopolies, no poverty. And the voice also says, anarchism is one of the best things that's ever been invented. And I have to say, I agree with that.
Well, that's, I think that on that track, and so not many people mentioned that record of ours. That's from 1999, so that's now 21 years ago. And it's a collaboration we did with Chumbawamba, right after they had their international hit, Tub Thumping, and they were being attacked by a lot of their hardcore fans for betraying all of their principles by doing a major label deal and going corporate and all that. And we knew them. We're friends and mutual fans. And we proposed to them, you know, an idea. They said, why don't we do a collaboration? It'll confuse your fans and our fans, you know. And everyone's saying that you've sold out all your principles in politics. And the proposal was, why don't we make it be about the very thing you're being accused of betraying? And they said, great. You know, they were very into it. So that's how that project came about. But the text is actually being read by David Wills, the weatherman, but it's a text from ABCs of Anarchism by Alexander Berkman, that book. So he's actually, you know, reading stuff like that in there. So I think in the end, I would say personally, you know, I mean, I have a kind of analogy to any kind of isms, to any kind of fundamentalism, to any kind of exact political system, to any kind of exact set of rules, but and ultimately I think that as much as we deal with all this dark stuff in our work at times, I think ultimately we're negative land is we're a bunch of idealists, and so if trying to describe an exact, you know, there's aspects to anarchism that I think are really interesting and definitely great things to aspire to. There's also, you know, though I wouldn't prefer it, I wouldn't want this, but if we're, you know, if I had to choose, given the system we're embedded in, which we talked about earlier, capitalism, you know, if we could have a system that was super duper regulated and really highly taxed, you know, kind of like they do in the democratic socialist countries in Northern Europe, you know, I think that would work. It works. It's got problems, and ultimately, I think it still probably self-destructs at some point. but it's, you know, it's definitely more humane. It's a kinder system. So I'm kind of interested in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but,
more.
We are really. You know, if you study history, we are at a point where we are doing all the things that civilizations do when they collapse. We're there. We are absolutely there. And yet the difference is we've never had this many people and that we've never had a global system that, you know, we could have civilizations collapse and they would be regional, you know? So, okay. You know, the Romans are gone, you know, the Dutch, they, you know, they're gone. Spain, you know, Portugal, England, these are all different countries that had their turn at being an empire, and they eventually, those empires collapsed. The countries are still there, but the empires collapsed. But now we're in a moment where the empire is sort of America, but it's sort of the whole way the world works, and it's definitely, you know, it's definitely collapsing. So what do we do? And and I'd say for my friends and I, one of the answers, there's a lot of answers to that question. There's a zillion answers to that question, but one of them for us is we're going to make art about it. We're going to make creative works about it. And somehow we're drawn to doing that. And somehow that seems to have value and meaning to people like you, somehow you wanted to talk to me because our records have some meaning to you. And I'm sure you enjoy listening to music that's a good love song as well, probably. but somehow this stuff we're doing, you know, has some value to you in some sort of way. And we just toured Europe. We just got back about a month ago. We did a two-week tour of Europe. And we played cities we've never played before. And we met people who've been listening to our work for 30 to 40 years who, you know, were shocked that we were there and excited to see us. And it was really really meaningful to have conversations with people after shows who are fans of what we do and been following it for so long to hear about what we did, what it meant to them. Because obviously we're not doing this because it's a good way to make a living. That was really, really nice to kind of have it reaffirmed that, yes, this particular, there's a lot of things we could be doing with our lives, but this particular path that we've ended up on, has some value to it. That felt really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see a great value in what you've been doing. I'm speaking with Mark Hosler. He is with the band Negative Land. I am curious to hear a little about the roots of Negative Land, what inspired you in the beginning, especially the relationship to punk rock, which sort of exploded just at that same time. I'd love to hear a little about how punk maybe inspired Negative Land, what your relationship was with punk. There, just to throw in there too, in ABCs of Anarchism, you do use some clips from John Lydon and the Sex Pistols, and there's a piece called Gimme the Mermaid, where you have thrown in there some bits from Gimme, Gimme, Gimme by Black Flag. Yeah, so I'm just curious to hear about punk rock and Negative Land.
Sure. How much time do we have?
I know. I wish we had...
I'm trying to think of a shorter... The answer is a little complicated, but there's absolutely a connection. I would say, and I'm speaking for myself here, because Negative Land is less of a band and more of a collective of people working in, different mediums. So, in fact, when you see us perform live, you're never seeing all of the group, because not everyone who's part of the collective wants to perform. So there's just sort of, it's like there's the performing arm of the group and the record making arm and the video making arm and the website making, we kind of all overlap. But not everybody wears every single hat, for sure. I grew up in the suburbs in California, Northern California, east of San Francisco. And I was, an odd kid who was drawn to odd things. And also I was drawn to odd noises and sounds. In fact, my mother has a story from when I was born that I used to, before I could walk, I used to go up to the heat vent in the house on the floor, and I'd run my fingers along it, this kind of grrr, grrr, grrr sound, because I just loved the sound. And I used to tear up pieces of paper and eat them, because, that's what you do when you're a toddler. But my mother's told me that mainly I liked the sound of the tearing. It was pretty clear. It wasn't so much eating the paper. And I liked to get soup cans from the lower cabinets, and I would get them out of the shelves, and I'd roll them on the ground. This is all before I could walk. And I only learned this when I was in my 30s, and I was really sort of amazed to find out, because, there's always that nature versus nurture argument. And I thought, wow, I was actually born with this interest in odd noises. It just is innate in some way or so. I don't know where that comes from. So things caught my ear as the years went by and I got a little older. There were certain pieces of music that had something in them, that kind of caught my ear a little bit. And at some point I started getting interested in, prog rock, Gentle Giant and Genesis and Pink Floyd and King Crimson and groups like that. And I was listening to Mike Oldfield, Tubular Bells, because that was a very interesting, odd record. Also, it was made entirely by one kid who was only 19 years old. So that kind of was inspiring to find out that just one person made this, and he wasn't that much older than me. And so by the time I was, 14 or so, film soundtracks. I ended up hearing a film soundtrack for the movie Sorcerer done by the group Tangerine Dream, which played something called a synthesizer. I didn't know what that was, but I was just determined to find out. This is all pre-internet, so finding out what these things are is very mysterious, pretty opaque. But I got interested in anime. I was obsessed with animated animation and animated monster movies. I was making little animated monster movies when I was 13 and 14. I was writing screenplays based on novels when I was 14. Just all on my own. I just got really interested in films, film soundtracks, music. You know, there was a repertory cinema in Berkeley called the UC Theater, and I started being able to talk my dad, and I had one friend who was a couple years older and was just starting to drive, and we'd go see, you know, repertory cinema stuff. And again, this is, you know, pre-internet, so this was this magical portal. I'm suddenly seeing old films by Kubrick, Fellini, Truffaut, you know, Werner Herzog, I was there when Werner Herzog ate his shoe, actually, and Eraserhead came out. So this is all like 75, 76, 77. And all this, you know, this is all way more exciting and interesting to me than what's going on culturally in the suburbs that I'm in. And then punk rock starts happening. And that's interesting, too. And I'm not very interested in punk rock. Clearly, there's all this fashion that goes along with it. There's a look. You know, I just could care less about that part of it. You know, I think I had long hair and probably wore button up plaid shirts and bell bottom corduroys. But there was starting to be this kind of do it yourself culture was starting to emerge. And I was pointed towards a record store in Berkeley that was selling imported music from other countries and independently released music. And I didn't even know this existed. So this was, again, also very inspirational to hear. I mean, I was hearing, started to discover other music like Perubu and Faust and Kraftwerk and Neu and Cluster and Klaus Schulze and Steve Reich, minimalist. I mean, I still loved, you know, I still like prog rock and all that. The first Clash album, the first Black Flag album, the first Devo album, the first Talking Heads record, all that stuff was coming out. Television, Marquee Moon, which is still one of the greatest records ever made. And, you know, all of this was just so exciting in my ear. And hearing all this experimentation and exploration happening with sound. And what interested me about punk, and I started going out to some shows, but pretty quickly, people who were doing things with punk were jumping off and kind of going further with it sonically. And my sense, and this is something I've explained to people much younger than me, is that, and you can tell me what you think about this, but when punk rock started, I think punk rock was equally an ethic and a music style. What I took to heart was the ethic. And to me, do you know the band Wire?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so Wire to me is like kind of the template for what I thought punk was going to do. If you listen to their first album, which is a somewhat arty, kind of a little avant-garde punk album, and then their second one, they're getting weirder and a little more sonically strange. You know, I Am the Fly, that song, that still makes me want to jump up and down and dance whenever that song comes on. And by their third album, 1-4-5, it's getting really, really weird. Well, I just, at the age I was at, you know, again, I'm 16, 17. I'm just thinking, well, this is what punk rock is that you just keep pushing the envelope. Punk isn't about ossifying into a particular style or sound. That wouldn't be punk at all. It's that you keep pushing. So when Sex Pistols dissolved and Public Image started, that was an evolution that really, you know, there's a great evolution to me listening to, what else, early Gang of Four. Of course, I mentioned Perubu, Modern Dance, Dub Housing. I still love all those records. Still love all that stuff. And so, and I happened also to discover Bowie right when he was in his period of working with Brian Eno. So I kind of thought, okay, here's a big music star, and the creative trajectory he's modeling for me as a kid is, oh, don't stick with being normal. Get weirder and weirder and weirder. So by the time Bowie turns around and does Let's Dance, I'm just thinking, what? You know, David, what are you doing? Come on. Oh, man. Because that other stuff was so good. So that's kind of my takeaway from from punk was an ethic and an attitude, and that you didn't have to be a professional or an expert, and that you could do this yourself, and that you could in fact utilize your limitations to your advantage. You know, if you're not attached to sounding, you know, if I've only got a 4-track tape recorder, what can I do with those 4 tracks? You know, if I can only play 2 notes on a saxophone, what can I make out of those 2 notes? You know, if I can do 1 chord on a guitar, what can I do with that? And just being very open to any and all kinds of sounds. It was a very, very exciting time for me exploring that way.
It was a very exciting time, and everything you're saying resonates with me. Even going back, listening to Tangerine Dream, I saw them do a concert maybe in 1984. Mike Oldfield, yeah, I listened to Mike Oldfield and all these bands, and even had the same feeling about David Bowie with Let's Dance. Like, I kind of stopped listening to him after that.
But by 84, Tangerine Dream is horrible. And what happened was, also remember, I'm coming of age where I'm just old enough that I watched Nixon resign. I was 11 years old or 10 when he resigned, and I understood that this was a historic moment and that the president's a crook. He's been caught. The Vietnam War was stopped, seemingly, at least to my young eyes and brain, by protests. And I was too young to be involved with that type of activism, but I was just young enough to pick up on, okay, illegal wars are bad. The Republicans are they're pretty bad political party. Racism is bad. Homophobia is bad. Sexism is bad. The Equal Rights Amendment is clearly going to pass. How could it not? It's just a no-brainer. And here we are, you know, 40, 45 years later, and it still hasn't passed. But I just came up just an interesting little tiny window of time where I had this kind of optimism that human beings learn from our mistakes and that positive change for all of us in social justice issues and just humanity, is we're just on an ever upward ramp toward things being better and better for everybody. So I don't know what would have happened if I was just a little bit, you know, been born a little bit earlier or a little bit later. I don't know. And the same with punk rock is that I literally was shocked when punk rock started to turn into hardcore and it kind of just turned into a style and a hairstyle and a you know, that you had a Dead Kennedys jacket on. And also I encountered a fair amount of kind of testosterone-driven macho-ness in the punk scene in California, and also a kind of a streak of anti-intellectualism, and that was a super turnoff for me. It's like, that's awful. You know, yeah, this is exactly the stupid stuff I'm dealing with in the suburbs in my high school. I don't really need any more of that. So, again, my takeaway was the ethic, and do you know the album No New York, that record?
Oh, yeah, Brian Eno.
Yeah, well, yeah, so anyone out there listening, check it out. It's 4 bands on 1 album. Brian Eno produced a bunch of these sort of so-called no-wave bands in New York City. It's The Contortions, Mars, DNA, and Teenage Jesus and the Jerks. And I got to have dinner with Lydia Lunch a few years ago, and I learned that she really was a teenager when she made that record. But that record to me was so crazy and scary, intense sounding and wild that, again, I thought, oh, that's what punk rock's going to do. That's where it's going. And, you know, and little did I know. So by the time, but I really took that ethic to heart. I think other members of Negative Land did. So by the time you zoom ahead to 1991, when we put out the U2 EP, which it looks like a new record by the band U2 called Negative Land. This is when U2 is the largest band on the planet Earth. And we make this record that I think still one of my favorites. I think it's very funny. And I think it kind of has, in one tiny package, I think it's all the things we do well, you know, in one little record.
I think so too. And yeah, that record is really still really mind blowing. Would you say a little more about it? People who haven't heard it, it has in it clips from Casey Kasem, And those are shocking and weird in themselves. And then tell us a little bit about what happened, you know, after with you two suing, their record companies suing you guys and SST also. And we have about 5 or 6 minutes left. I wish we had 5 hours.
Well, you can always have me back. But, yeah, it's a long story. We published a book about it called Fair Use, The Story of the Letter U and the Numeral 2, and there was a documentary movie made about it called Sonic Outlaws. But we were just taking our appropriation aesthetic and further and further and further, and we ended up making this record that I think, you know, we loved it, but we knew it was a provocation and could possibly get us in trouble. We didn't realize it would get us in as much trouble as it did. We actually underestimated how much U2 and their record label and management would freak out. And it's actually because, and this was not planned, the release of that record got delayed and delayed and delayed. And by the time the U2 single by Negative Land came out, it happened to come out a month before a new U2 album called Octoon Baby. So it appeared to everyone on all the record stores, back when there were record stores, that this was a single being released in advance of the record, because that's a very common thing you do, you know, an advance single. So it just, the timing couldn't have been more perfect. And it sent us on an odyssey that really changed our lives and ended up propelling, like, me personally into, I've lectured now about our work and these issues it raises over 120 times all over the world. You know, it's gone all kinds of amazing places. But it's a little hard to explain it to someone who's a lot younger, because at this point, U2 is old and classic rock, and they don't know who Casey Kasem is. He was a top 40 DJ who had a nationwide radio show. But we were definitely poking and into a hornet's nest of pop culture by making that project. And this is just to bring it back to what you're asking me about, that I thought, and I still I think that record, you know, I'm not going to swear on the air, but that record is punk as F, you know. And to me, the RU2 record, I thought, we're doing what I think punk rock should be doing. And, you know, I felt like we were actually embodying it really by our standards in that record really well.
I agree. I think you were.
Thanks.
Yeah, and I appreciate your points about how punk rock, I sometimes look at punk rock as a potentially revolutionary movement, and it seems like in any movement, you were talking about the notion, which I've held too, that things can get better and better for people. There can be more justice, equality, less violence. That along the way, there's a lot of hurdles. One of them is a freedom movement. There's some tendency among human beings to codify and make rules and end up saying, the way to be free is like this, and if you're outside of that, then you might be punished or, you know, in some way become an outsider. And
yeah,
and that's an interesting problem, and even punk rock suffered from that. That's how it goes. Hey, I wanted
to... Well, let me just say something about that, a kind of a bigger picture thing about that, is I think one of the systemic problems, it's just one of the main problems we're dealing with, is that we've created a system, an economic and political system, that basically rewards you. You get to the top of the heap the more you're willing to make choices that are sociopathic and psychopathic and cruel. And the more you're willing to try, if you want to make choices that are humane and fair and just and looking out for everyone else, and in fact are the choices that Jesus would have made if you know, do a careful reading of the New Testament, which I have done, we've got a system where literally people who are mentally ill are in charge. And so they're drawn to black and white thinking. They're drawn to fundamentalist thinking. They're drawn to isms. They're drawn to hierarchies. And so it, by definition, the kind of people, it's pretty much, I think, that anyone who thinks that they should be president of the United States automatically has no right to be president of the United States. Just because you think you should be, it's like you're automatically disqualified. So, yeah, it's an incredible conundrum we're in, because we end up with societies we end up, we have, tribes, we have villages, we have cities. We end up trying to figure out ways to run things and govern and keep track of the roads and the water and take care of people. And what do we do when someone murders someone? You know, there's all these things we're trying to create as humans to kind of make things work as our populations get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But it's baked in to it that it creates all of these problems. And going back to what I said earlier, it's one thing when the problems are going wrong in your little valley or your little part of, a continent somewhere. It's a very different thing when these problems are now seen on literally, a global scale, with the permafrost melting and acidification of the ocean and, topsoil erosion and all this super scary stuff. So, sorry, yes. That's not a very cheery way to wrap up your interview.
Can we end with a love song, maybe?
A love song. Yeah, I don't know. What is the love song on? What is it? It's on Sigmo Tactic. It's Extra Sharp Pencils. It's actually me singing, which I hardly ever do on our records, and haven't done it in a long time. That record came out in 2008, but that actually is a love song. Mm. So, but sorry, you were about to ask me another question. So in the 5 minutes we've got left here.
Yes, and I kind of need to wrap up now, like in the next minute, unfortunately.
Oh, okay, sure.
And, that would be great to talk again because I wanted to talk to you about Edward Snowden and about the relevance and importance of culture jamming and creating our own media now. And you bring up a really, really interesting topic for me, actually. Negative Land has this piece called Christianity is Stupid. And you just said something really that resonates for me a lot. The radical revolutionary-ness of Jesus's teachings and life, even being an anti-capitalist, I would say. And we will have to talk about that next time. All of that is interesting, and we will have to chat again. Maybe, Mark Hustler, just say a word about the upcoming album that you're expecting to release in 2020.
Well, we haven't revealed the title yet. It's top secret, even though we do know what it is. But basically, if true-false, I would describe true-false as an overview. It's kind of a Negative Land overview of a lot of what's going on right now that's, again, giving all of us a lot of anxiety, and that the sequel to it is a sort of a deeper dive into technology and aspects of how technology are impacting us in many, many different ways. Enough that what happened was this was all going to be one album, and then it turned into a double, and then it turned kind of into a triple. And then at some point we said, no, we have to actually, this is starting to, it's starting to kind of wind into two different projects that we can present as interconnected, because they all came from the same time period of creativity. And they do, I think they do very much go together. But we ended up with enough, unbelievably, given that we've had, three members of our group die in the last 4 years, 5 years. But we actually had enough stuff that we felt really good about that we ended up kind of organizing them into these two different releases. So, yeah, there is a sort of a preview. If you go on YouTube and look up Negative Land, and you have to spell it right, because there's the second E isn't there. But we have a track called More Data, and More Data is a track from that upcoming record. There's a video for that too. The video for More Data and Destroying Anything both were made with us collaborating with this really wonderful filmmaker and editor in Los Angeles. Her name's Ryan Worsley. So I've got to give her a shout out for her efforts to help us make a few little videos.
Great. Mark Hustler is with the band Negative Land. He's one of the co-founders of the band, and their latest album. What's that?
It's not a band. Go ahead.
A collective.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. And no E in negative. Mark, thank you for speaking with me. It's been really great talking. And let's, if we can, talk again when the new album comes out later this year.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me. And it's very nice to talk about. It's great to talk about all the stuff that we're getting into. It's terrific. Thanks for having those questions.
Yeah, I appreciate it too. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Okay, you take care out there in possibly sunny Santa Cruz.
Yeah, it is a little bit here in the Redwoods. Okay,
all right.
Talk to you soon. Thank
My
you.
My life in the woods has been ruined.
Right. Okay, bye now.
Okay, bye.
Thanks. Yeah. This is KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org. My name is John Malkin. This has been Transformation Highway. Here's a little bit of Negative Land from the album True False.
Either or, black, white, I and you, we and you.
We get into a loop.
Either or.
It's really hard to make decisions about everything.
Black, white.
So I want to take those things that I do every single day.
I and you.
And I want to put them in a part of my brain that doesn't...